Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
Today I want to talk about something. It's a word all of us hear and never really think about. I want to talk about immortality. Because if you think about it, the concept of immortality is the entire foundation for almost all organized religion. Because directly or indirectly, everybody wants to know the same question: what happens after this? We all want to know that, right? Okay, I mean, we've talked about death before, but this is not about that. This is about something entirely different, okay? Now, when people ask this question, they don't really care what the afterlife looks like. What they're really asking is, what's it going to be like for me, personally, okay? And if you want to get even more specific, what they're really asking is there anything I can do in this life to improve the odds of enjoying my experience once I get to wherever it is I'm going? That's the real question. You see, for most of us, the real concern is not just about whether this physical form lasts. Most of us are pretty well convinced that this body we have is eventually going to shut down, fall apart, whatever happens. So I would like to point out that it doesn't have to happen before we die. A lot of people haven't figured that out. But there's still a lot of questions that a number of us have on the subject. So let's talk about that. Now, the first question is there anything after this? Okay, because if you get in a conversation with one of your friends who's very religious, they want to talk about heaven and all that other stuff. So is there really anything after this? Because if this life is all there is and there's nothing, it makes a difference. It makes a difference in how we live, how we treat people, what we believe about the environment, and all those other things. Now, I was thinking about this a little bit, and it seems to me that it's a lot harder to live an honest, compassionate, loving life if you're an atheist. All right, because there aren't a lot of rules to follow. You don't have to worry about breaking them. And, you know, if there was no such thing, if there was nothing after this, that would really affect the Muslims and the Christians and the Catholics and these people that base their entire teaching upon that. It would require them to change their approach, maybe to be a little more, you know, compassionate and rational themselves. That's why most fundamentalist churches condemn atheists, because they're hard to control. Okay, and they don't like to give money either. So, you know, anyway, but that's, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek. But even if that's a valid assumption, whether or not it is, you know, whether there is something, I think the vast majority of people in the world, for a variety of reasons, actually believe in their own heart and their own mind, not even based on any religion, okay, that there is something else beyond this. And that something continues after we leave, whether it's reincarnation, a term we use, which actually means coming back as another person, or something called transmigration. How many people know what that is? Transmigration is you can come back as a tree or a frog or, you know, something like that. That's what most people think is reincarnation. Or come back as a cat, which would be my own personal preference. Actually, one of my cats, if I have to come back, that would be a good deal. And then there's the other ever-popular heaven, hell, Sheol, which is the Jewish concept, Nirvana, which is Hindu, and all that option, where our life is only so long, and then after we go, we get judged and scored and sent to one or the other forever and ever. That's another one. There are other ones, and I won't go into them, but those are the major ones. Now, the confusion comes when we feel the pressure to know the right answer right now so we can live our life accordingly, all right, and not make a wrong choice that'll affect us in the future, all right? So most people, they make up their mind what they think goes on after this, all right? Then they give their exclusive attention to one religion or one teaching or one philosophy, or they exclusively follow a certain set of rules that they think are going to work for them going forward, all right? But the truth is, nobody really knows. All right, it's a one-way street, right? Nobody really knows. In fact, there's a story. It's a cute little story I heard years ago, and it's about a student of Zen Buddhism who had studied for years with one of the great masters, a man who was revered all over the world for his wisdom and insight. And one day, the student said to him after a meditation, "Master, I've been thinking about this question: what happens after we die?" And the master looked at him with a blank face and said, I have absolutely no idea. And the student's eyes got wide and he said, how can that be? You are a great Zen master. And the man smiled and said, yes, but I am not a dead Zen master. Okay? So you got to love those Zen Buddhists, you know? Here's the point of that story, okay? True spirituality, and I think the two words should go together. True spirituality doesn't really care about the afterlife. It really, really doesn't. True spirituality knows that there's something more than the physical world we see, not just after this life, but before, during, and after. That's what true spirituality understands. There's something that has always been and always will be, but it doesn't waste time worrying about it. True spirituality follows the words of George Santayana, the great philosopher, who had a great statement. He said, there is no cure for birth and death except to enjoy the interval, which is very, very profound. That's why this teaching, though it explores the issue a little bit and offers a few logical suggestions, doesn't tell anyone what they need to believe about after what happens here. And that's one of the things that appealed to me when I showed up. Now, historically speaking, okay, the belief that some part of us lives on after we die, the historical part, started about 7,000 years B.C., or about 9,000 years ago. That's when several different cultures in different places around the world, the anthropologists, started finding people buried with things like food and weapons and gold and sometimes with concubines and family members and all this kind of stuff if you go back to the pyramids. And at first it was only done for the important people because the common folk figured these important people had something to do afterwards, so, you know, they needed that kind of stuff. But eventually in some cultures it got extended to everybody. In fact, I thought this was interesting. Around 2500 BC in Mesopotamia, which is current-day Iraq, every person who died was buried with, I wrote it down, 7 jars of beer, 420 loaves of bread, 1 change of clothes, seemed a little tacky to me anyway, 1 pillow and a bed. Every single person was buried with that. So there was obviously a point in the collective consciousness where people started to believe that something continued after this. But because we couldn't see what that something was, you couldn't measure it or see it moving or anything like that, people then thought the body was the thing that lasted. They believed the body went on some kind of a journey and it was going to need all these different supplies for the journey or whenever it got where it was going. But eventually, human consciousness evolved, as it does, into a recognition that our body is not who we are. It's simply a costume, okay, existing in time and space for some purpose, some unknown purpose. Unfortunately, it got left to the religious institutions to tell us what that purpose was. So some of the early religions believed the purpose of the body was to serve the gods or to serve their representatives on earth. And later, some of the traditional religions, particularly Christian, Catholic, and that group, whatever, they started to see the body as a source of temptation that we had to learn to control. That was really, really interesting because we were a body, but we still had desires, we still had free will, so that to them, the body was a test. And if we could overcome our earthly desires, we went to heaven, and if we couldn't, you went to hell. Very, very simple. Now, even before that, the Eastern religions taught that life is suffering, so the body was a temporary learning tool that we needed to use, needed to learn how to transcend and to control. And if we didn't learn how to transcend the physical form in this life, we'd do it in the next, or the next, or the next. Now, the common element in all these different beliefs was there is a real and unmeasurable part of us that is permanent and non-physical, a part that uses the body for only a certain length of time. And they called it spirit, they called it the soul, they called it our essence, they called it our life force, the Asians called it chi, all right, all these different things. They called it all sorts of stuff. But what it really was circumstantial evidence of an individualized life force that had intelligently, very important, intelligently created or adopted this body as a vehicle so it could physically express itself in the physical world. That's what it was. However, this consciousness, whatever you call it, that maintains our body is not the body itself. It's a completely different substance, a completely different energy, and what we see as physical death has no effect on it at all. In fact, that's the part of us that does not die. So it is, by definition, immortal. Immortal, all right? Now, there are a lot of different ways to talk about immortality, some of them very religious and some of them very irreverent, which is my personal preference, as you know. A woman by the name of Lynn Grabhorn, who wrote a book, a wonderful book, write this down if you got notes, called Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting. It's a great book. It's been out 20 years or so. She used to say that life is like being an actor, which is a metaphor a lot of people use. She said, when we're born, we put on a costume, this thing, a meat suit, some people call it. We get on stage. We hopefully experience the fun and the excitement and the drama of being a character in a play where we're constantly improvising. So this is improvisational theater. But when the play is over, we set aside the costume, okay, and the character, and we go back to being our real self, our higher self, our immortal self. What we have to remember is this individual spiritual personality that we go back to being was there the whole time. It was present the entire time that we were here, okay? It was just covered up by costumes and makeup and distracted by props and the other characters on the stage. And as every actor knows, there's always another show. So, anyway. Now, actually, when we talk about living, the possibility of living forever, even at the spiritual level, it scares some people to death. Because for some people, life is hard. For them, it's always been a struggle. You know, life is hard and then we die. And the idea of living countless thousands of years scares them to death because they just don't enjoy it. So for people with that mentality, since they are spiritual beings, whether they know it or not, their job is to somehow learn to enjoy the little piece of life they are living in the moment. In the moment. They, us, for any of us. That's what we might call the price of immortality, because even though we don't carry our physical body or our personal effects with us, there are things that we do take with us when we go. We take our ability to laugh. We take our ability to love with us. We take our ability to experience joy with us wherever it is we go. These are the kind of things that our soul is using our body to learn while we are here. Now, immortality doesn't provide us these things, you know, like love and laughter and joy and peace of mind and all these things. It just gives us time to enjoy them once we've discovered them. Once we've discovered them, okay? Now, there are people who refuse to enjoy their body or their freedom or their time or their money in the present because they believe experiencing physical pleasure through the body or material goods might threaten their eternal happiness, that God or life doesn't want them to enjoy themselves. But here's the problem with that kind of thinking. First and foremost, whatever we do in our life, whatever we do with our body, whatever we eat or drink, whomever we choose to sleep with, whatever, no one's keeping score. No one is keeping score. So whatever so-called punishment we receive, either now or later, is going to come in the form of logical consequences for our actions through the law of cause and effect. So that means if we abuse our body here, smoking, whatever it happens to be, we're probably going to get sick here. Okay? If we eat too much unhealthy food and don't exercise, we're probably going to put on a few pounds with our physical form. If we try to sleep our way through the 30309 zip code, we're probably going to have trouble forming a relationship, a meaningful relationship. Those consequences come in the present. But none of those things will have the slightest effect on life's attitude toward us or on our own immortality. Because the truth is, this power, God, Spirit, supports us, and our real essence never dies, no matter what we do in the time we're here. All right? But, there's always a but, okay? The fact that we live forever and that this personality continues to grow and evolve however it happens, all right, does not guarantee that we will automatically live in bliss and happiness, okay? When we leave here, we believe that we will keep on living in whatever state of mind we were in when we left. All right? Dr. Raymond Charles Barker said, nobody improves by dying. Okay? It's a great statement. Okay? We will leave this benefiting from whatever life lessons we learned and still struggling with whatever life lessons we failed to learn. So the process of evolving and learning and growing is going to last as long as we do, which I am either happy to tell you or sad to tell you, depending on your particular circumstances, is going to be a very, very long time. So if there's something in your life that you want to heal or need to heal, some fear you have and have had for a long time, some anger you have towards someone or something, some regret you have for something that happened years ago, now is as good a time as any to start doing something about it. Because you're going to have to do something about it eventually. All right? Now, there's a quote I heard once I really, really liked. I can't remember the author. It was a woman. She said, millions of people long for immortality who don't know what to do with themselves on a rainy Saturday afternoon. Isn't that a great statement? I really, really love that. You see, the important thing is not whether or not we're going to live forever. That's a given. The real question is, are we ready to live forever? That's the real question. And how are we going to be living while we're doing it? In eternal happiness or eternal meh, as some people will? There's a chapter in The Science of Mind, for those of you who don't know what we call our textbook, Dr. Ernest Holmes, the founder of this teaching, he said this. He said, we should not look forward to a hereafter without activity, but to a place where our work will be done in greater harmony with divine law. Because of greater understanding, a place where there was nothing to do would be eternal boredom. Eternal boredom. The activity he's talking about that goes on and on is conscious activity, not physical activity, probably not much different from our conscious activity here. Now, the form may be different. The mechanics of it may be different because the place will be different. But we're still going to have some things. We're going to have our free will. We're going to have our desires. We're going to have our intelligence. We're going to have our ability to create. And we're going to have our ability to love. All the things that we have right now. And we will still have a personal responsibility to exercise these things in order to grow. Then he writes this. He said, if we were really to continue as a self-conscious personality, which means a continuation of who we are now, we can do so only if we maintain a continuous stream of the same consciousness and self-knowingness that we now possess. So that means we're going to remember what we learn here. We're going to remember what we learn here. Maybe not the lessons or the people that we learned them with, but what the lessons taught us. Because our individual personality, now and forever, is the sum total of our memories, of things we have and haven't done with our life. A good example of this is a close friend of mine a number of years ago. Her husband passed. They had been married for 30 years, something along those lines. And I called her on the one-year anniversary of her husband's passing, and I said, how you doing? And she said, you know, he's much more portable now. I had to think about that for a second. She said, he's much more portable, okay? She said she could talk to him wherever she was, whatever she was doing. She could listen to him and love him. She could lean on his strength. His body wasn't there anymore, but everything else about him that was important still was. So if the people who bring love into our life are able to remain so powerfully in our consciousness, why is it so hard for us to believe that we can remain conscious forever within the mind of God? I mean, how hard is this? That's all immortality really is. Really is. What we have to remember is there's nothing to lose. We have nothing to lose because life isn't something we have. It's what we are. It's what we are. We are life's eternal expression. That's the way Dr. Holmes puts it. There's something in us that doesn't age, that doesn't get tired, and doesn't end. There's something in us that never changes, but it's the source of all our physical growth and change. That's the connection between the two, both in this life and in every other existence we ever have. I mean, if you think about it, none of the great spiritual teachers, whoever you read about, ever spoke about death. They spoke about life. They spoke about life forever expanding is the way we put it in our Declaration of Principle. And there's a good reason for this that we can all benefit from. In fact, for anyone who is living this life to the hilt, and you've all heard that phrase, okay, anyone who is passionately loving in their life, creating in their life, enjoying, succeeding, prospering, all those things, this makes perfect sense. Because we should all want to live every moment of every day in such a way that we're not afraid that it all might end at some point in the future, or even tomorrow, or even tomorrow. The writer Aeneas Nin once said, people living deeply have no fear of death. People living deeply have no fear of death. A better way of saying that would be people who live deeply think only of life. They think only of life. If we surround ourselves in this life with people we love who also love us, when we finally step across the line or pass through the veil or kick the bucket or whatever metaphor you want to use, okay, there will more than likely be people there to greet us, some of whom are bound to recognize, for better or worse, once again, okay? I mean, that's what happened on the day we were born. We showed up in this completely strange place, and you came out, and something in you said, that's my mom, that's my dad, that's my brother Fred, whatever it happens to be. We somehow recognized people around us, okay? Because we're all on the same path. We're all on the same path. We're going through this the same way, okay? We're all experiencing it the same way. So I want to close with a paragraph from Dr. Holmes. And this is a paragraph that means a lot to me because I have read it aloud at probably 100 different funerals and memorials over the last 20 years. And it really has an intelligent summary, sort of life and death. And he says this, with this understanding of eternity, everything we've been talking about, should we not be able to view our passing in a different light? Life. The experience, death, loses its sting, the grave its victory, when we realize the eternity, the immortality of our own being. Nature will not let us stay in one place too long, he says. She will let us stay just long enough to gather the experience necessary to the unfolding and advancement of the soul. This is a wise provision, for should we stay here too long, we would become too set, too rigid, too inflexible. Nature demands the change in order that we may advance, and this is the last line, he says, when the change comes, we should welcome it with a smile on our lips and a song in our heart. So the lesson there is, if we live every day with a smile on our lips and a song in our heart, we don't have to worry about it when the time comes. And that's what we will take with us whenever we go. All right? This is the truth in your life. And this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's just take a few minutes here. Relax. Take a breath or two. These kind of subjects bring up a lot of thoughts based on the people we have known in our life, based on all of our experiences, all of us react in a different way. But it still reminds us that when we say there is one and we are all one, that oneness lasts forever. It has no beginning, it has no end. It is life itself. And each one of us, no matter who we are, where we're from, whatever our particular experiences happen to be, are completely 100% that one life. Each one of us carries the same life within us. Each one of us is an expression of life. And each one of us has the ability to express that life in greater ways than we've ever done. So as we know this and accept it, we begin to look at the world in a different way. We look at the drama in the world and see it as a movie. We look at the pain and suffering in the world, and we see something better because we know that these things are false ideas that do not need to exist. They do not exist in the mind of God, and they do not need to exist in the mind of men and women. So as we know this, not only do we see something better, we think something better, we know something better, and whenever possible, we do something better. We become a part of life that is growing and expanding in healthy, happy, joyful, prosperous ways. And we know this is true not just for each of us individually, but for everyone who expresses this life, which means everyone. We recognize that those who came before us still live in our memories, in the collective memory. Remember, we recognize that those who are not yet born will have us in their memory. And this is the continuation, not just of humanity, but of spirit. This is how spirit expresses itself in, as, and through us in amazing ways all the time. So as we go through this world with all its various distractions, we don't get dragged down. We don't get caught up in the pain or the drama or the things that so many people stay occupied with, because we know that there is something greater. We are all learning lessons. We're sharing those lessons. Sometimes we're repeating those lessons, but something great can come out of them. A greater understanding, a greater sense of love and compassion, a greater sense of connection. And as we begin to recognize this connection as the true nature of all of us, we see ourselves in every other person. Not just the people in our family or our neighborhood, but the people on the other side of the world. All of us are capable of something greater, and each one of us here, by awakening our consciousness, welcomes something greater. We give thanks for this awareness. We give thanks for all that we have been given and all that we have yet to give. And with a deep sense of gratitude for being a part of life, we accept this truth as our own, we embrace it, and we release it. Join me in saying, and so it is.